Welcome today, everybody. This is Mike from ProThink.org. Today is May 30th, Friday, 2008. We have a returning guest, wonderful guest here with a wealth of knowledge. His name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and he's from the website IamTheWitness.com. I'm sure many of you will be familiar with his work, and we'd like to welcome you on the show today, Daryl. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Michael. I've been feeling a little bit bad lately, so I actually took about 10 days off here. I'm getting some strength back the last couple of days, so that's good. I'm going to try to get back into doing more of the work I've been doing. So it's a tough world we're living in, huh?
Yeah, well, we got to keep you healthy, brother, man. We ain't too many of us out here to get sick here. So wanted to bring up a couple things today. I kind of wanted to do a show where we focus on the similarities between the Bolshevik Revolution and how that went down and the end result, and exactly what I'm looking at is the same game plan that's being run on the United States. And first let me ask you your interpretation of the history you got and the knowledge you got of what happened with the Bolshevik Revolution, how it went down, and the end result, and then we can get into the similarities of what's going on here in America.
Well, I'll give you a thumbnail history of how the Russians ended up being taken over and becoming the Soviet Republic, criminally so. The fact is, the Tsar set himself up as a foil to the Jewish Zionist control of the world, and in several instances in the early part of the 1810 to 1830 period, he interjected his military and got in the way of the Zionist juggernaut. He put himself on the coast of America at one point, telling the world that if certain forces were getting involved in the American war, that this was at the Civil War, that he would bring his troops down to bear, and he brought ships right into the harbor in San Francisco. And so basically what was happening was that the Zionists realized they had to get rid of the Tsar. And they knew that earlier on when they were trying to back the war against Russia through Napoleon in the early part of 1805 to 1810. That failed, and then of course the next one came when the Civil War started and the Tsar helped the Americans again, telling other forces to stay out of our fight, and so finally, when they had an opportunity at the First World War to tip the scales of power in Russia, and what they did was they backed a revolution at the time when Russia's finances were at their weakest. Russia had an antiquated military. They had a very badly run bureaucracy. It was top-heavy with lots of rich expenditure going to the rich classes and nothing happening to feed the poor. So $20 million was dispensed in New York by, I believe it was Schiff, Jacob Schiff, and through the Rothschild fortunes. And 4,000 Zionist Jews went from New York over in a boat in 1917 and became part of what became the Russian Revolution. Now, they had already had an ideology they were going to inflict upon the Russians. That was, of course, communism, collectivism, where the individual no longer is important, but rather the idea was to take away individuality and have everything relegated to the state, which immediately takes out of circulation any dissent, because immediately if you're complaining about a process within the state, you become a enemy of the state. And that was exactly what happened after they were successful in their revolution. And at the top, a lot of these Jews changed their names. They took on Russian-sounding names. There's a whole list of them you can look up on the Internet. But that was not only the people that took over, also the names of the people who wrote the Communist Manifesto and many of the people that were involved. You'll find names like Jabotinsky and Carasso and others who were also involved at the very same time taking over the Caliphate of Turkey. Both of those revolutions happened in the same time frame, around the World War I period. So what happened was, after that implosion, the Jews of Russia and the New York Jews who run over there to control things began taking all the leadership places in the society. By 1930s, a man named Andre Dickey wrote a book about the Jewish infiltration of the highest levels of the Soviet government, and about 90% of the control, name-wise, people-wise, religion-wise, was in the hands of Zionist Jews, and they were less than 1% of the population. So you asked me in the beginning, the question you asked is, how could it be that there were similarities? Well, let's do France for an example, modern-day France. There are 600,000 Jews in France. There are 60 million French. So they are 1% of France. They are, every single major company is run by Jewish interests, by Zionist criminals. Every single high position in government office is administrated by a Zionist Jew. All of the main power spots within the media and within research and development, university structure, are all in the hands of Zionist Jews.
And could you illustrate, once we'll get back to Russia, once they actually took control of the entire nation of Russia, once they got all their boys in place throughout the government, could you kind of illustrate what the some of the laws they put in about calling one of them out, and what they eventually did with this power, which I'm sure many
are
well known.
It became a crime to identify a Jew in public. In other words, it was punishable by death, much during the Stalin era. And you'll notice that Stalin's wives were Jewish, and many claim that Stalin was a Gentile. But in fact, there is scads of evidence that go toward the belief that Stalin himself was a Jew. And if not, he certainly was working on behalf of Zionist Judaism. And Zionism, I think, is the important element here, because not all Jews are working to help these people. Here's the interesting thing. You can tell one of these criminals by their actions. And are they working directly to benefit World Zionism? And, of course, you know, World Zionism has some very easy-to-define goals, and so all of them terrible, but easy-to-define goals at the same time. So Stalin, even though you can't prove definitively that he was himself Jewish, he certainly was a Zionist.
Yeah, definitely true. So we got some laws they put in place, and let's clarify this. This isn't these aren't laws that were specifically just geared towards derogatory statements towards Jews. This was just identifying that someone was a Jew. So, you know, when you get this idea where people have, you were mentioning, people change their names to sound more Russian-like, though we're trying to hide, and this is where you get the definition of what's called a crypto-Jew, where they've changed their names, they hide their identity and either their race or religion at that point, and they made laws to identify this. This was executable law, right?
Yes, it was. And in fact, what they use in the West, because we were supposedly a freer people, they made the identification, they have made the identification of Jews a statement of anti-Semitic nature. And so if you stand up in front of a crowd of people and say the things I just said about France being controlled by Zionist Jews, they would scream bloody murder that you're an anti-Semite. The simple fact of the matter is that, and I used this on the website two years ago. Let's take, for example, Michael, if everybody was a Mongolian, and that all the Jews, instead of them being Jews, they were Mongolians, and every one of them was in the high office, they were running our Justice Department, they were running our media, everybody would be up in arms, they would be flipping out. Why? Because a Mongolian is clearly different looking, you see. You would be able to identify them by sight. But see, what's happened with these Ashkenazi Jews, because you can't identify them by sight in some instances, the only way we can know that they're working for Zionism is by identifying their affiliations and their religious affiliations and their affiliations to a community. And what they have successfully done is made that seem like a racist statement, when in fact what we're basically doing is you know, waving a flag saying, this needs to be looked at, ladies and gentlemen. How can it be that 2% of the American population is running 85% of everything? There's something desperately wrong with that ratio. Is it that only Jews are smart enough to be in charge of media? Is it that the Zionist Jews are the only people that can make a movie? Is it that Zionist Jews are the only people who can research new medicines? Is it that Zionist Jews are the only people that can run a White House or run a Congress or run... Come on. You know, start looking at this and say, wait a minute, no. In fact, one of the lies that they've tried to propagate is that Jews themselves are more intelligent than others. That is an absolute bold-faced lie. It is a lie. Now, they might have skills in certain areas, and those areas are actually areas that I wouldn't be very proud of in many instances. But the simple fact of the matter is given equal access, every human being is probably capable of giving you the same kind of effort or qualitative return as any Zionist Jew is, and they're no better than us by natural fact or by any other.
Well, so exactly. The simple truth is, you give me the resources that these people have, like being able to unlimitedly print money, own everything around. You give any other type of group of people out there these kind of benefits, they're going to appear to be the smart and wealthy ones too. I mean, it's just a matter of position that they're in.
Well, more than that, even let's go for the last 40 years, 50 years. How about if you're from a Zionist family who happens to be millionaires? You get to go to a school with all the teachers in high school, where all the teachers are doctors. You get to go to special camps, and you have a planetarium in your high school, and you can take piano lessons. And you know why? Because they've amassed all the money, so they're going to spend it on their kids, while the rest of us down here in the pits, you know, we have, okay, your parents say to you, look, you can take piano or you can play basketball, but we can't afford to have you do both. Well, guess what? The Zionist Jews family say, well, hey, we can pay for anything you want. You want to visit France to learn French? You want to, you know, you want to find out what scuba diving's like? Here, take a class. This is not the benefits that we're given. And so, of course, if you give somebody free and welcomed access to education at the very best level, you're going to get a better product. But let's take one of these kids out of Harlem and give him that same upbringing and see what kind of quality you get at the end. And I guarantee you that kid will play piano like nobody's business, and he'll be very intelligent, and he'll have skills that are now ascribed to only Jewish people. Why? Because they're spending on private schools. Why? Because they're getting all of the best universities. And this is what's happened. And then they turn around and use that justification to tell everybody they're smarter than us. And that's a big lie. And don't let anybody tell you that. Now, the fact of the matter is, they are better educated than us, but that's by design, not by genetics.
Exactly. Now, to get back to the end result, because what we're trying to get at here is to show people the importance of what's going on, especially in the United States here. It's a very grave concern of the game plan they're running, and it's almost identical to what they did in Russia. Now, let's illustrate to people the murders, the mass slaughter of the Russian people when these people finally got the power. I mean, with the gulags and everything, could you kind of illustrate what these people were capable of when they did this?
Well, first, after World War One, the consolidation started going into areas that the Russians did not directly control prior to that. One of them was the Ukraine. And what they did was they knew that farmers, by and large, were very independent people. Farmers are generally self-sufficient. They're very stubborn. You can't bully a farmer because, you know, they're the kind of man that is a man's man. They're not some of these pencil-necked, female men that you see running around our streets today. And so it became very clear to the Zionist controllers that they needed to control the Russian steppes where the food production was coming from. So what they did was they used food as a weapon, and they went in and destroyed the farms and confiscated the stores that the farmers had built up. And they let 30 million people die over a three-year, four-year period, and gutted the strength of this farming region, which was an independent, strong region. That was one of the main things they did. Second, what they did is they built up a structured system of internment camps in Siberia. Everyone is familiar with the movies when you say they sent the dissident to Siberia. That's become a famous statement to make when you want to talk about repression. They were sent to Siberia. And of course, recently in the 1970s, a book by Andrei Solzhenitsyn. Solzhenitsyn's book was called The Gulag Archipelago, and I remember reading that years ago about the horrors of the Russian internment camp system in Siberia. Well, that internment camp structure was actually a very well-oiled machine. They knew what they were doing. They needed cheap labor in areas where people would not normally be living. They wouldn't go there on their own. So they found people who, in most instances, were either marginal or dissident in some way, and they cleared the streets and shipped them by rail out to these camps. Now, these camps were very, very controlled. You lived inside of an enclosed area, poor hygiene, poor food, poor infrastructure, and oftentimes people would die by freezing to death or undernourished, malnutrition, digging mines and tunnels and harvesting wood and other things. One of the things that we can look back on now and see is that structure of gulags that they perfected in Russia was exported to the United States as late as 7 years ago by a man named Yevgeny Premakov, who was a contract employee of the CIA and of the Homeland Security. They put him to work, and he helped design FEMA's work camp structure, along with a man from Stasi named Marcus Wolf. Now, this Primakov guy was a KGB. He worked at the highest levels of the Soviet structure, and as much a criminal as any human being has ever been tagged with. And the fact is, they have exported the whole planning stage of this next move in America right out of Russia.
And this is another thing to illustrate, too. I was listening to an old interview you have done quite some time ago. It was back in 2006 where you were talking about Michael Chertoff, now, who's the director of Homeland Security, whose last name in Russian translates to Son of the Devil, for those who don't know at this point. But his grandfather had come from Russia at this point, and I haven't been able to dig up any information on this to confirm this, and maybe you have, but is it possible that he was part of this Bolshevik Revolution?
It is, and I don't have. I can't make that statement because I haven't looked into that. I do know that his mother was deeply involved in the foundations of Israel, and I know that his family has rabbinical roots, and I know he's a dual citizen, and I know he's one of the people within the infrastructure in Washington that they will not allow a lot of criticism of. He's never in the limelight. He's much like this guy, Rahm Emanuel, who has a very similar pedigree as Chertoff. The people are not spoken of very often in the press. They don't want the world to, the American people to know just what these people's background really is. But the fact is they go back deeply to rabbinical Lubavitch movement, which is the virulent form of Talmudic Judaism that you will find behind this Zionist movement. This structure that has been put in place now through the Patriot Act and other criminal anti-constitutional laws are just setups for what they did to Russia in the planning stages to happen in the United States. And I believe much, if not all, of that planning has already been done. And I think it's just a pull-the-switch kind of situation as it stands. One of the things that we can look for to stop them would be the fact that we still have several hundred million guns in private ownership. However, what I'm finding is that the willingness to ever use these weapons that people have in private hands to secure their own liberty and their own freedom may be less sure. And I worry because my experience after 4 years of doing this is that people will sit on their hands and do nothing, watching the world get worse around them, and actually not do a whole heck of a lot to even save themselves. And I fear that may, in fact, be the case presently.
Yeah, I'm seeing the exact same thing where, you know, you'll hear people talk all day about how they'll protect their family and they're not going to come take my guns. And you go look at the event in New Orleans where they just, you know, kicked in whoever's door they want. They took the rifles away, even in non-flooded areas. And that would be a shame if America lets that happen on a wide scale, where you have a country that was founded and set up with some forethought into this idea to arm the public, the citizenry. So when you have this incident where we have another Zionist Jewish revolution going on within it, and this is a silent coup d'etat, and I kind of want to illustrate it to not necessarily digress, but get back on topic with what's going on here now, is that they're running what's it's like a silent coup d'etat where they're getting their own people in place. When I say that is in effect that they've used a lot of puppets throughout the past within the Congress, the Senate, the White House, different departments. They've used puppets throughout blackmail or payouts to kind of build strength. Now, you know, the old saying goes, when you want to get a job done right, you do it yourself. So now what they're doing, I feel what they're going to end up doing at the final move here is to start burning all their blackmailed Gentile puppets to get their own boys in, so they make sure they have a lock and key on this entire government system here, like they did in Russia. What was it? Andrei Dyke was saying it was about 94% Zionist Jewish controlled in the Russian government. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was up around 90, and then he put question marks beside names that he couldn't actually prove they were from Jewish origin, and the fact is, he said those may have been as well. What you found is that they concentrated in academia, they concentrated in of course, their own brand of homeland security, and in intelligence, but again, media. But in the academic area is one of the big things, and they actually fanned out across Russia to control individual school systems so that the indoctrination process could go on into the next generation.
Yeah, and they've certainly done that here. Like, so recently we had an event here in Wisconsin where I live where the ADL was training police departments to look for extremist, anti-government, and hate group extremists, and of course, you know, anybody that speaks about Zionism or anything like that is considered hateful, you know, because these people don't like getting the light shined down on their nefarious actions. But at the same time, they're doing the same thing here. You know, you got Michael Chertoff, who's the director of Homeland Security. His next three ranks down from him are all from the same tribe of people. His attorney, where attorney general now, is from, I believe, the same synagogue as him, Michael McCasey. So when they pull the trigger on this country, I think the final straws they need to really have in place, if they don't already, they might already be set up for them within the entire Congress and Senate, where they have the control of Department of Homeland Security all the way down to the police forces domestically.
Well, what we need to find out, and this is one of the things that people can't get the real story about, is the continuity of government documents that that Cheney and Bush put into place. They've been deemed a national security document, and they can't be read by the public. So in the event that they pull off another false flag situation like they did on September 11th, they will put this continuity of government plan into action, but we are not allowed to read this plan. And I believe it's going to usurp the power of Congress and Senate so that the executive is in full control. And, of course, if you take a look at what the executive is comprised of, it's almost exclusively in the hands of Zionists, if not 100%. And, see, hold ownership and control of the media will be less important at that point, because even the non-Zionist media would never go up against a completely controlled executive. So really, they've got that. It doesn't bode well for our future that we can't find out what's going to happen in the event of some false flag attack. But it seems to me that it'll be bad, and I think it's not far off into the future here, in my view.
Yeah, you know, that's the temperature that's going around with everybody that's in the know, and you know, people I speak with that have any knowledge of this, you know, we're kind of seeing a point where it's the quiet before the storm. These people they don't want this information getting out any further than it already has, because it is damaging them. But at the same time, they have to do something big. They have to create a whole lot of chaos at this point, so they can do what they did through World War I and World War II. And this is what we're trying to illustrate to people listening now, is that when something like this goes down, you have to be prepared. You have to be very prepared. And I don't know about you, but we have talked about this, and I don't think we got too many more months left.
I agree with you. I think that on the long side, we'll be looking at September. On the short side, it could be any day. I don't exactly know if it'll be an American event or a French Paris event or some kind of London event again, but they do want to solidify the triad axis of evil, if you will, the axis of evil between the United States, Britain, and France, under the control of course, you know, Zionist elements within all three countries, and of course Israel being their criminal partner as well. But it looks like those three countries have started to team up to push their agenda forward, and the only way they're going to get the French to go along with it is possibly to have something happen here. And it worries me that is true, because it's a perfect opening for these criminals to use the next false flag attack either here in Paris or possibly in America again. I don't know. But they're trying to resurrect this Bin Laden character that is long dead. You know, the guy's not around anymore. I mean, it's a nonsense. I mean, I you know, you talk to people who don't know anything about this, and they look at you. I said, Bin Laden's been dead for 6-7 years. They look at me like, oh, really? And I'm like, yes. the saddest thing, you know, the saddest thing is to look in the eyes of some of the people that you share this planet with, and you can see that the lights are on, but there's nobody home. And I mean, truly, truly nobody home. And it's a frightening thing, because these are the people that are going to be sharing, you know, this fight with. And in fact, there's no fight in them. There's none in them. And they'll just go, they'll sway with the breeze, trust me. They're not going to come and they won't stand beside you in the next stage of this. They really won't.
Yeah, they've done a really good job of stripping out the warrior and the man throughout these nations that they're in control of the education system and the media and stuff. They've done a very, very good job. So you're talking about this kind of like they made everybody into sissies, you know. They wanted, oh, the women wears the pants in the family, and you've illustrated that very well before. Yeah, we were talking about this before we started the show about France possibly getting a hit. I'm thinking along the lines, because if France singularly gets hit, it's not going to really rile up America, because right now at this point, you know, America knows we got suckered with this Iraq war and this Afghanistan war. They don't know the details behind it, but it's been obvious. It's been something behind that. Just like most American knows that, you know, 9/11 wasn't exactly as it was told. They don't really have the depth of how deep it goes, but they're going to need... You know, there's talks that the USS Kitty Hawk aircraft carrier might get driven past Iran. They might false flag that, like the USS Liberty. There's talks that they might false flag a nuke in the America. I'm thinking along the lines of France and some of these other European countries, multifacetedly, where they do it all at once. And
that's a possibility. They could do something. Like a major city in the United States, along with a parallel attack here in France. And I'll tell you why France is important. Their military is fresh. They haven't been involved very deeply in any of these activities. They've got a very powerful military here, several large aircraft carriers the size of the George Washington. Most Americans think the French don't have anything in the military. They've got a jet fighter force that is like second or third in the world. The fact is that it's a military that these criminal Zionists would love to employ. And the way to get the French behind this would be to pull one of these crazy false flag deals. And, of course, if something happened in America at the same time, that would be perfect impetus for the use of a martial law. And, of course, you know, the middle-class imbeciles out there who still think Al-Qaeda is real, they'll be sending their children to go over and fight on behalf of the Western world, you know, and freedom. And in fact, and of course, the British would go right along with it too, because by and large, the Western middle class, still has not caught on. You see, what I've discovered is that we are in a specific group of people, very closed. We We communicate with people. I turn away from people who are stupid right away about these facts.
As
now,
do I.
They're not stupid in that they couldn't learn, but they haven't learned yet. They're not incapable. They just haven't done it yet. The fact of the matter is that gives you a false sense of everyone knowing, because everybody you deal with knows the truth. But the simple truth is that the majority out there doesn't know. And it's brought home to me every time I make a little foray outside of my little circle and start talking about these things. People immediately give me a look like I've lost my marbles. And so I'm made very aware of the fact that the penetration hasn't been outside my own small circle of contacts, been very, very deep. And sadly, that's going to work in their favor when they do this next round of things. You know, there are still people who are swinging the American flag out there saying, let's go kill Arabs, let's go kill Muslims and stuff. It's madness. Madness. Yep.
Yeah, I always find the irony in that just disgusting that you got, out of the three monotheistic religions, you got two Jesus-loving religions killing each other for the third.
That's right.
And
that's right.
It comes down to this. America is going to be the last, I believe, I hope this is true, that's going to be the last bastion of hope for this to be stopped. And it's going to take people getting enlightened very quickly. I don't know how that could be accomplished, but at the same time, as long as we can get Americans, the core values of America are still there, and we got some real men out here that have a pair on them, that when the time comes, they're not going to tolerate what's going down. Whether they know who exactly is doing what, they're still not going to tolerate their guns being taken away. They're still not going to tolerate people being rounded up to go to FEMA camps. They're still not going to tolerate the complete, utter destruction of Posse Comitatus, where, you know, the military's occupying the streets. I've talked to a lot of military vets, too. I got to tell you, a lot of the military vets are so disgusted at the treatment they're getting. You know, it's always known that once you get out of the military, you just get bent over. They don't care about you anymore. But it's at the point where they can't afford to even keep up, and it's been that way for a while now, where they can't even sustain the people that are in the military, rightfully so. And they're getting quite ticked off, man, that they're not getting taken care of properly. So you're going to have, the ones I've asked and that didn't have any knowledge, or the ones that I've already given a lot of knowledge to, they've all pretty much said the same thing, that they know some people within their battalion or their platoon that would readily take guns away from Americans. But for the most part, I'm seeing the temperature being that it's not going to take much to tip them over the edge and say, you know, we're not down with this anymore. When that call comes to start shooting Americans and start rounding them up at the camps, that's when they're going to lose it. They're going to lose their structure with at least the American military. I'm sure they definitely have alternative plans in place for that, but
Let me give you what I believe. Okay, about 2%, 1 or 2% of the American public has already been identified as dissident. There's about 8 million, 9 million of the people that they've come up with. Anybody who has ever called Alex Jones' radio show, your phone number is shown on a incoming call response, and your name goes right to Central. Anybody who's ever called RBN, I believe, is going right to Central. They've been anybody who has any contact or ever donated bought a video of dissent is on the list. The simple truth is that they have earmarked and targeted groups of people. Now, whether or not you're going to get the local police to get involved, I think they're right now in the process of vilifying those 8 million. And if they can successfully vilify the 8 million of us out here who have been talking about these truths right along, then we are toast. If on the other hand, more people than just 8 million, if it's 80 million that start knowing the truth, and we need a whole lot more people out there telling the truth to get that to happen, but if we can get it up to 80 million, it'll be a very difficult thing for them to do to bring the hammer down on America. However, they do have foreign militaries willing to bring their troops to American soil and shoot Americans. So what you need to understand is, you know, people like Alex Jones are out there collecting names, collecting addresses. He's a bad guy. That's why he associates with people from from the John Birch Society and from Loose Change, which will never tell you the Israelis are behind it. He had a guy on the other day where he was in full agreement from the ACLU. This guy is absolutely 100% end of story, a bad guy. And he's got tens of thousands of people ponying up to his programming. And the truth is that many of them who have made calls to his show are on a list. And I'm sure of that as I am breathing right now. And so the fact is he's not the only one either. Hal Turner comes to mind. Stattmiller's programming. When you call Stattmiller, you're toast. This guy Stattmiller, I'm sure, has been sending names directly to Langley and to FEMA and Homeland Security. So, you know, the real truth of the matter is, guys, it's going to be an individual effort. My belief is that if you live in small-town America, like most people do, believe it or not, most people are still suburbanites, especially people who are interested in the facts. What you need to do is start shipping your local police department these informations or try to peel off one of the police department members and start informing them, educating them. Of course, you don't want to go for the guy with the shaved head because he's already predisposed to wanting to punch you. But in my hometown, for example, in Massachusetts, there's 18 policemen on the small town force, which is like under 20,000 people. And all of them, if not most, if not all of them, came from the community itself. And, I know three of the people on the force because I went to school with them. The truth is that they can be approached in small towns, and you can show them the facts. And these people will be much less likely to turn on their public once they realize the scam. And so I've always advocated for a small-town America to inform their sheriff's departments from the local community and their police departments from their local community. Because if we don't get these people on our side, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult for us to make our our presence known when the final hammer comes down. You know.
Yeah. Not only that, but you made a good point too. A lot of people out here want to sweep up the I'd call the bottom of the barrel public out here, which really aren't going to be effective in anything. One of the strategies I found is that you focus on one or two people and get them extremely informed, so you don't have a ton of people that think, say for instance, it's just 9/11 is a lie. You have a handful of people that know exactly what 9/11 was, so that we have more teachers out here in this stuff. Also, to dovetail on the police idea to inform them, military families that have people that are in the military right now, or
right.
Military people
right.
Themselves, get them informed especially, because these people are already committed to fight and shoot, and they already probably have at this point. So these people are assets, very strong assets. You got a choice, people out here that know this information. Either you can have them work with us, or you can have them work against us. The key here is whether you're willing to get out there and inform these people to put them on our team, because it's just a matter of deprogramming them from what they've been taught, these lies and these distortions in reality here. If you can deprogram them, get them the information, they're on your side now. So you can't look at them as necessarily the enemy. You got to look at them as an asset that you need to acquire at this point. And it's up to you people to get out here and inform these people. What's your word on that?
Well, the way to do that too, Mike, to tell people the facts, people won't listen to that. They want to be you. The best method for that is leading them to the truth, because Socratic education is the only way you can successfully break down somebody's resistance to a belief that they have. If you try to pound a different belief into somebody who's already come to their own conclusions, and they may be the wrong ones, but you can't do it. They will just harden their position against what you're saying. What you need to do is say something like, isn't it strange that that a 40-story building fell 5 hours after that attack in New York without absolutely nothing hitting it? And they say, well, I never heard of that. What are you talking about? Yeah, I heard that this building, they call it Building 7, I think. You should look into that. It got hit, and it came down hours later. And nobody can explain how rationally, except that it was destroyed with explosives. Have you ever heard of it? And see, when you do things like that, people go, oh. But if you try to browbeat somebody who believes that the Arabs did this, they'll become resistant and they'll harden their position against you. So what we need in this fight are opinion shapers. We don't need just people. We need people out there, that 1 in 50 persons or 1 in 100, who actually has a great way of presenting information without ramming it down someone's throat. And that's the kind of person that's going to do the best job out there, you know. And you can do it slowly, feeding somebody little facts here and there until they finally latch onto the idea that there is something terribly wrong, and they begin to do the research for themselves. Once that happens, you've got a convert, and you've got a strong convert, and they're happening every day. I get emails every day. I get 40, 50 emails a day, Mike, sometimes. With the spam, I get over 100. Simple truth is that there's new people coming to these facts every day, and, you know, they want to fight as though it's fresh for them. I mean, and me, I'm sitting over here not feeling well and trying to keep it fresh for myself. You know, 4 years of doing this, I'm one of the grandpas of this deal, so...
Exactly. You made an excellent point there is how to approach people, because, yeah, if you just try jamming it down a throat, hey, it's these guys are doing this, they're doing this. Yeah, the way you illustrated that is excellent, because this is some of the tactics I use, too. Like, you put a Benjamin Friedman speech on a CD, and you bring it to somebody. Instead of making it look like you're just passing out CDs to everybody, hey, you have to listen to this. Like, you know, I give it to somebody, and I say, man, I was given this CD, and what's on here will astonish you. I said, I don't know what to make of it, but you make up your own mind and look into this, you know. And you give them that CD, and you make it look like you're at step one with them right there. And like I said, you know, wow, I heard this CD. You got to hear this. It's wow. You know, you kind of get that strategy, like you're learning it with them, like you're down there with them. Because
you're exactly right, and it works, doesn't it?
Oh yes, works excellently. You know, or like, you know, I heard on Fox News that there was all these, you know, Mossad agents caught around 9/11, and they classified it. Why would they classify this? You know, that's strange. You know, what's going on with this? You know, and then. Yeah, you could. It's the way. Is you made an excellent point, though. To get back to that, is you can't jam it down your throat to be aggressive. I've been guilty of that in the past, because you get so frustrated with trying to get somebody to want to be enlightened with it, and you know, it's just like anything else in life. If you try jamming it down their throat or telling somebody what to do, they don't want to be ordered. They don't want to be told what to do. They want to feel in the community you're in to present the information.
That's right. But they've turned that corner and made that to shift in their beliefs, then they oftentimes become very ravenous about what they want to learn and what they want to know, and that's the point where you can move on to another. You can just, you know, sprinkle a few ideas in front of them after that, and go on to the next. And here's the second suggestion: never waste time with somebody who doesn't want to hear it, because basically, again, you're wasting your time. There are plenty of people interested right now because of the way the economy is going, of course. They're wanting to know who did this and why. And so this is a very fertile time for us to recruit people to the truth. So don't waste time on people who are not going to bend to the ideas. And if you find resistance, move on. What you may be able to do, though, is in a month or two, go back to that same person and see if there's been a shift in their opinion or in their ideas. But certainly, your time's better spent by people who are going to, you know, to at least be interested in the surface part of the story, and that'll actually, you know, I think over the next couple of months, as people's finances become worse and worse, which they will, we're entering into a hyperinflation period here. They're going to want to know who did it, and they're going to want answers. And if you say blanket statements like Jews did it, I'm going to tell you that their automatic Pavlovian response to the idea of the word Jew is going to stop them from learning. If you tell them, on the other hand, that people from a banking community that all happen to have ties to one another are did it, and inform them of this through the Benjamin Friedman speech, it's a wonderful template for learning. That is going to start them off. And then once you've got them past that, introduce the idea of Zionism and blame it on the Christian Zionists as well. And so that when you scattergun approach it and say Zionism is a political movement, not a religion, then you're not stopping them from the indoctrination they've gone through for 40 years. some of the people that were trying to shift their thinking, Michael, have been brainwashed to think that the idea of blaming a Jew for anything would be catamount to racism. And so the approach of Zionism to people allows you to say that this is a political movement, and it's followed by both Christians and Jews in the world, and you start explaining it to them. Finally, after some time passes, you can say, but all the leadership is Jewish. There are plenty of Christian Zionists out there, but if you get to the top of this pyramid, it's only Jewish Zionists.
Exactly. So to wrap this up, basically what we're going to tell people out here is when the time comes, don't be a coward. Get prepared right now. If you don't already have a stock of food, I highly advising doing that. And Daryl's site is IamTheWitness.com. I do have a link for that on ProThink.org. I'll leave you with the last words, Daryl.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. As I've said in the early part of the show, I've been kind of feeling a little bit sick lately, and I'm feeling a little better, and I hope to be doing some more podcasts on my site, and I look forward to looking to your front page and seeing what you're putting up that's new. I enjoy going there as a regular stop in my rounds of information, Mike, so keep it up, will you?
Well, I appreciate you having it on the show today, and yeah, for everybody else, we're signing off, and take care and look after your loved ones. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.